It's Warren Coughlin here. Welcome to another episode of the Business That Matters Spotlight. If you've been listening, you know what this is about. This is where we spotlight entrepreneurs who combine business discipline and a desire to make the world a better place through entrepreneurship. So we all know about franchises. We see them everywhere. If you've heard of or read the book, The E-Myth, it talks about creating what is essentially a franchise system so the business runs effectively. So have you ever been curious about franchising? And can you do good in the world through this business model? Can you combine franchise, licensing, corporate, all of that? Well, today's guest has done it all. And what's cool, she's done it successfully in a business that, well, wouldn't jump out at you as the most obvious kind of business to franchise. Lice treatment for kids. Icky, maybe for some, super helpful for those facing the problem, right? Absolutely. An entrepreneur since the age of five, committed to living her life purpose. I'm really happy to have on the spotlight Dawn Mucci, founder of Lice Squad and superhero kids hair with care. Dawn, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. Dawn, one of the things we do here on the spotlight is try to reward listeners with some value right out of the gate. So before we jump into anything else, some people have to jump off before a full podcast runs, but we want to make sure they get value. So if you could give one tip to an entrepreneur who wants to do some good in the world and or achieve accelerated growth, what would be your advice?
Find an unmet need and fill it, and then never give up in your pursuit to get to the goal of business success.
A little persistence.
A lot of persistence.
Nice. Now, normally, I like to get a full origin story from guests, their whole background and all that kind of thing. But I'm sure people listening are thinking, what the heck made somebody start a lice removal business? So what's the story behind that?
Serendipitous. I was a young mother. Well, actually, it was a child who often got lice and was very stigmatized by the situation. I was ostracized and felt very ashamed. And little did I know, it was just because I was a very social child. I had clean hair and I was really had a lot of friends that I played with. So anyway, as a kid, it was a really horrifying experience. And as a young mom getting it from my son, I went back to that place and I just thought, hey, you know, I don't think anyone should feel this way about such a common human condition. And I'd like to find a way to solve that issue for myself and my child, as well as help other parents do the same thing. So I did just that. And 23 years later, we have franchises operating across Canada. And we've now broken into all things kids hair care. So we do a number of things other than head lice removal service.
Nice. Well, but let's start with that piece. So what does Lice Squad actually do? Is it a physical location? Do your folks, go to homes and schools? Is it chemical? Is it physical removal? Like, just how does it actually work?
Lice Squad is a full service head lice removal company. We do physical lice removal services. We have a number of products that aid us in our process. We have clinics, bricks and mortar clinics, as well as mobile opportunities for, schools obviously can't come to a clinic, so we go to the school. And we do full service, everything you ever needed for head lice, basically.
And you've done both, when you and I spoke a little bit earlier, you've done licensing, you've done corporate ownership, you've done franchising. I think that's pretty interesting to a lot of our listeners. I know a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with which of those formats they should pursue, and you've kind of done all of them. Can you share a bit of the pros and cons about this, how you juggle all of them?
Well, I mean, whatever growth model you decide to use in your business, you need to educate yourself about that growth model and obviously have a good mentor and people around advising you. And once you've decided what you wanted to do, whether it be one or a combination, it just basically comes down to managing people. So corporately, you're managing employees. You build a corporate structure around that. If you're in franchising, you're basically leading and inspiring other business owners to take what you've created and the roadmap that you've created and use that to implement and run their own businesses. So you're always just working with people in whatever capacity that be, as an employer, employee. In franchising, there's a really fine line between the autonomy of the business owner versus being an employee or a sub-employee of that of that company. So really defining the fact that, if you're in franchising, you're selling the rights to your brand and the training and the kind of leadership and oversight of that. And these people that come on board and believe in your mission and vision are independent owners and independent business operators, so they're autonomous in their own hiring and firing and management of employees, and you are basically just there to train and oversee and inspire and lead those franchisees to success.
And what level of is, because I've been involved in some franchise, I have clients who have as well, and there's always this tension, right, between, you know, the franchisee has to follow the system. The franchisee is an independent business owner. When they don't follow it exactly, you know, there's some sort of oversight or accountability that often leaves franchisees feeling that they're being treated as employees, but the franchise owners feeling that they're being delinquent and damaging the brand. Have you had any of those experiences? And like, how do you navigate that tension?
Well, I try not to get into those tense situations by being very supportive of my franchisees and more encouraging rather than coming down with the hammer, so to speak. I tend to have a very open communication with my franchisees, and those that aren't, you know, meeting my expectations, it's a conversation that we have to have, and it's a two-way street because their success is mine and mine is theirs, and they have to look at it in that fashion, that I'm not there telling them what to do and how to do it and breathing over their shoulder. I'm there to support them and to give them the leadership they need and the support as far as field coaching, things of that nature. So if a franchisee is struggling in a certain area, we coach them on how to, you know, improve that skill set. I mean, a lot of business owners don't have the, you know, the day-to-day operational skills. They're just really passionate about whatever it is they're doing. And so, you know, we need to coach them and encourage and lead them into finding people to help them with that, or helping them to learn those skills, because last thing you want in any business relationship, or any relationship for that matter, is tension. And right. The best way to relieve tension is good communication.
Nice. That's I love hearing that, because I've seen some franchises where the ownership group has a fairly autocratic kind of style, and it creates some unpleasant experiences sometimes. But other franchises like yours have that collaborative relationship, and I think we'll get into the success you've had. Obviously that style has worked for you. Curious for people listening, at a per unit level, what's more, like per unit as in per outlet, what's more profitable, like a corporate route or a franchise route?
Well, obviously, corporately, you're making all the money, so that is a very profitable thing. And with franchising, you don't have to be all or nothing. You can do a hybrid, like what I've done is a hybrid model. So I've chosen some key areas where the profitability is good for me, and I keep those as corporate stores. I have several of those. And then I have other areas that I'm just too far away from that are not profitable, but they're just better run locally. So most of my corporate locations are within my reach. I can drive to them pretty easily. But you know, obviously corporately, you're going to make all the money.
Right. So it sounds like you take it not just as a uniform, this is a monolithic approach to the business, but it's strategic based on geography and needs and availability of labor and all those kinds of things.
Right. And availability of service providers, right? You want to see a need in an area, like, and meet that need. So if you're not getting a need, you either begin marketing that area more aggressively, but making sure you have people available either as a franchisee or as a corporate location to start to meet that need. And everything in business is always evolving. You're never, I mean, you can do it one way or the other, or you can do it a combination, right? Whatever works for the time that you're in. We're in a really weird time right now. People are not spending on wants, but they are spending on needs, which is good for my business. During COVID, it wasn't good. Prior it was. So it's just
because people weren't seeing each other, so the lice didn't spread, I assume.
Yeah, and as business owners, you are pretty adaptable. You know, that entrepreneurial streak in most of us are, you know, we will adapt to whatever needs to be, you know, dealt with at the time. So resilience is a huge thing in any ownership.
Some people stay away from franchising because of like disclosure requirements, legal compliance, and things like that. What do you say to those concerns?
I say if you're doing it right, there's no need to fear those things. I mean, it might be a little more costly on the onset, but running a business corporately is the same thing. There's still those obligations that you have to meet as an employer or a franchisor. You just have to understand what those obligations are. And if you don't have a really good manager or, you know, HR person, and I think any fear in business is natural. But to let it hold you back, I mean, I started franchising when I had no idea what franchising was. And I did make a lot of classic mistakes, and that's normal. And it's how we all learn. So if you're already putting barriers to entry in front of what you want, how you want to grow your business, then that's already a problem for you.
Now, for you, you have, what, over 30 locations, right?
Correct.
And if I remember, you told me you've never had a franchise fail.
I have never had a franchise fail. I've had some retire. I've had some resell to somebody else. I've never had anyone like clear go out of business. And even during COVID, I mean, we did things like, you know, we did all the kind of homework and what was available. We did all the research for them to help them connect with whatever resources were available. And then we did things like waiving royalties and things like that just to help to get them through. Yeah, we all had, you know, peanut butter sandwiches for a while there, but, you know, now we're getting back to the steak and gravy and, you know, things are coming around, but I'm glad to say
that. I'm just curious, like that's actually pretty, you know, congratulations. Like that's a pretty remarkable outcome, you know, 30 locations, no failures, even during COVID, growing success now. Like what, you know, put false humility aside, like what made the model so successful? How did you actually achieve that? Because that isn't the norm.
It was achieved through, definitely through collaboration and through good communication with the franchise system. It was achieved by our culture, the culture of, you know, what we do and who we do it for. Being really good ambassadors of the brand and really caring about our customers, and having faith in the business itself and the model, because, you know, we were so grateful that we made it through, and there was times that was touch and go, but it just goes to show that if you've got something of value and you're passionate about it and you make the adjustments you need to make and persist as, you know, as you need to, you can get through pretty much anything. Honestly, I feel grateful for the people, all my franchisees and my staff who made their own sacrifices individually to help the business through. And it's a viable business. I mean, honestly, we've been through two recessions, well, kind of what we're in now, and then back in 2008, we've had a pandemic. You know, we've been through a lot. So it just shows the viability of this type of service and these types of products that are really needed, because, you know, parents and anyone for that matter don't want bugs in their hair. And
I don't have to worry about that, fortunately.
No, you don't. So that's good. But yeah, it just goes to show the proves the viability of the business. The fact that we, you know, created competition when we pioneered the industry. I think it's just great that this is even around, because it wasn't around when I needed it. And you know, people still really need the help. They are grateful for what we do, and we're grateful to do it for them. I know it's not the most glamorous thing. Don't get me wrong. I don't talk about what I do at social events, but I love what I do. It really is meaningful. It is purposeful work.
It's hugely important.
Yeah. And it pays the bills. And yeah, well, what more can you want than just, you know, doing something of value for other people, being of service, making a good living at it, you know, feeling grateful for, you know, for that ability.
Now, you mentioned when you started, you made some of the common mistakes. So what can you identify what some of those are for folks who are, you know, thinking about this? It might be good to have a heads up on.
In franchising in particular?
Oh, either your business generally, or if there are unique ones to franchising.
Yeah. Get a good franchise lawyer. I didn't do that. You need to do that. Really get a good franchise lawyer, or any, you know, get good advisement, get a good mentor. Good advisement. Get the professionals doing the things that you are not good at doing. Don't try and do your own books and waste your energy when you really are good at maybe marketing. And you should be using that as where you're spending your time, and hire a bookkeeper. Just really surrounding yourself with the professionals that you need to do those key components of business. And having, you know, the people around you to support you, because it is tough in the very beginning of running a business. And even throughout your business, you know, journey, you're always going to rely and need people. And it all comes down to the people and the culture of what you're building and what you've built. Because, you know, this business wouldn't have survived if the people that didn't come alongside and want to pick headlights to help other people. It's the compassion in those people. It's the people that are here to support the franchisees and myself and the providers. Like, we are all a team with a common goal, and it's our culture and our drive to be of service and, you know, enjoy what we do that for me was really fundamental in succeeding and being able to build this business over the years.
Now, one of the challenges in franchising, I know we're talking about the franchising, I want to get to other parts of the business in a sec, but I've seen some, one of the, there's some franchisees who will just basically take, or franchisors who will take on anybody with a check, and other people who are a bit more selective in how they recruit and choose people to be representatives of their brand.
Yes.
How do you go about that? Like, I think that's a really important screening and business strategy lens.
We do have a very strict selection process of who we actually reward these units to. I don't want to work with someone who's not passionate about what we're doing. I don't want to work with somebody who isn't in line with our culture and our core values. And I don't care how much money you have. You have to fit those two criteria to even be considered. You know, anyone can be taught anything but the attitude part and being in line with the culture and wanting to help people. And our core values is so fundamental to how I select a franchisee, because, you know, it is hard to sell a franchise for picking lights. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to be 350 units anytime soon. I'm not hamburgers or Tim Hortons. But it's very selective of the type of person who would want to do this. And I'm very, I am very selective on who I would award a franchise to, because they are the representation of the brand. And like I said, the communication and all of those things, the positive attitude and things need to be there for everybody to succeed.
Right. Now, just may as well put it out there, because you are growing your franchise. So what are your goals for the next year? And if somebody wants to be a franchisee, what do they, what should they do?
So they should apply at LifeSquad.com, and there's an application process that they go through to be vetted to go on to the next phase of the selection process. When it gets to the point of me speaking with them, I make my determination of, after looking at all the, you know, the stuff on paper, like I make my determination of the actual individual via a conversation and finding out a bit more about why they want to do this business and what their long-term goals are. And basically, I, you know, really want to sell 10 franchises this year, only because we have such a demand in the West that we're not able to keep up with it. Like our Edmonton and Vancouver, Regina, all of those areas are, have such a high demand. And I'm really seeing an opportunity for somebody that wants to do this type of work, or even if they don't want to do the actual work, because we don't want our franchisees actually nitpicking. We want them building the business and doing the business stuff, which is their marketing and networking and all of that. So I really want to see somebody have the opportunity to take this and do well with it, whether they, you know, do it as an individual business, or they buy it as a family business, or they just buy it as a business they want to just oversee and have somebody else kind of run on the day-to-day. I think there's a lot of opportunity out there, and I'd love to see people, I'd love to empower people to do that. And one of the best things about why I do what I do is to get to see that, to see that my ideas inspired another person to have a great way of making a living and to, you know, feed their family and enjoy.
That's rewarding, isn't it?
It's the main thing, because honestly, for all the headaches that sometimes business ownership, and especially a bigger brand that has, you know, a lot more responsibility than just one store, you know, you need those things to keep you going.
Now, people who've listened to this podcast, The Spotlight, all know that I'm fairly interested in culture as a driver of success. And you've mentioned culture now two or three times.
Yeah.
How do you within a like geographically disparate multi-unit business alone, let alone a franchise where there's independent business owners who come in with their own ideas. Mm-hmm. How do you go about fostering a culture? And even how would you describe the culture of your business?
Well, it comes down to making sure you're vetting the people that are coming into your business first and foremost. I mean, good selection processes in hiring employees or vetting franchisees is the most important thing. As I said, if I don't get a really positive, good, upbeat, helpful, collaborative, communicative vibe from a person, I just do not feel like they would be a fit. And that's our whole business is based on putting people first, helping people. We do the most, I would say, primal thing anyone can do with another human being, which is pick bugs. I mean, it goes back to the monkeys. That's what they did for each other. I don't know. It's funny and all, but that is fundamentally what we're about, is helping other people and putting people first. And so the culture for me is all about what can I do to serve you? And in serving you, that's meeting my purpose and making me feel like I'm of value. And it just becomes that reciprocal loop of, what's that word? It's my mind is not working the greatest today. Reciprocity.
Right.
So I foster reciprocity. I foster a helpful and caring and compassionate environment in my business. I don't tolerate, disrespect or gossip or anyone that, thinks they're better than anyone else. I find that it's important for us all to look at each other as equally valuable and, supportive of each other in our day-to-day work and lives.
And that would be important for kids to have that feeling, having someone come in, because it's a fairly intimate, and embarrassing experience for a kid. So you'd want people with that kind of compassion so that the kids feel comfortable and their parents.
Right. And that's why we put superhero kid capes on them. That's why our mission is to stop the stigma associated with head lice, and then to stop the overuse and abuse of pesticides on children and the environment. So our kids are just, we treat them so well. And we've had moms come in tears and dads come in, even I've seen dads crying because they don't know what to do with the situation. And they leave here feeling so empowered and so well taken care of. And that's that is who we are. Like, we are a caring company and we want our customers to feel that they're important and that we've done a good job to help them through a very stressful time.
I love this story so much, just because you started off with your first piece of advice, which was to meet, identify an unmet need. And, within the notion of a business that matters, one that actually helps make the world a better place. Like, what are the things that need to change? What are the things that need to improve? And how can you fill that need in a way that matters to people? It's just those stories about parents coming in and being so grateful and being emotional. It such a huge impact on someone's lives, I would think.
Absolutely. Anytime you can help somebody through something that they don't understand or that they're struggling with, I feel that that's what we're all here for on this planet, is to be of service to one another, right? In whatever capacity that is, be it picking head lice or, tutoring somebody or, helping somebody through a very stressful time, ministering to somebody, witnessing to somebody, anything that you're doing in service. We're being God's hands and feet, basically. And in this situation, when you have bugs in your hair, it is a very stressful thing. And I don't want to compare it to any other illness, but you would be surprised what this does to some people.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So what about you? Like, you've been an entrepreneur. So you told me since you were like five, where did that, it's interesting because you've obviously been successful as an entrepreneur. It started early, but you got this really interesting combination of having had that entrepreneurial instinct as a kid, but also being really driven by trying to do a good thing too. Where did that combination, can you identify a source of it, or is it just at a soul level it was always there?
It all comes from God, and it comes from just being a spiritual person, having a human experience and being here of service, and also to do what I was called to do. I mean, we all have a calling of some sort. And every good thing in my life and everything that I've accomplished, I owe that to God, and I owe that to the people I surround myself with that have come on board to help me. And I just feel like it's what I was asked to do, of all things.
Was there an entrepreneurial spirit in your family, or were there mentors or influencers in your life that exposed you to that?
No, not at all.
I just had no one around me was an entrepreneur.
No, nobody. I mean, I was, yeah, I honestly, I think you're either born or there's that question, are you born that way or can you be taught and created to be that way, right? What does it matter?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Right? Lady Gaga, you were born that way.
I guess so. Like Lady Gaga said, baby, I was born this way.
And so what was your first business? Like, you were five, you started a business.
Well, I was a typical kid with a box. I lived on a busy street in Toronto, and I lived above a flat, above a record store. And I would set up a lemonade stand, and I would sell all kinds of things, my old toys, whatever it was. I just realized early on how to make a dollar, and I started doing stuff like that. And I was always kind of, you know, looking for opportunity. And my dad was a bit of a biker hippie kind of guy. And I had more than one day, witnessed his friends coming over and giving him some money for some green stuff in a bag. And, you know, back then. Anyway, now it's all good. But anyway, so I'm a kid.
This is before there were shops on the street selling this stuff.
So I'm a kid. I'm watching this happening. And I thought, okay, this weekend, it's not going to be a lemonade stand. So I went outside in the back and I picked a bunch of grass off the lawn and put it in sandwich baggies, and I set it up on top of my box on the busy street in Toronto.
No.
And I was selling bags of grass for 50 cents.
That's just awesome. Did people buy it?
No, like that was the fastest business that ever got shut down ever. Like, as soon as his friend said, do you know what your daughter's doing at the bottom of the stairs? And that was that. He came down and whipped the box into the landing there and got me up to my room. I was grounded for 2 weeks. I couldn't understand because I was only just kind of like emulating what I saw.
Oh, that's like one of the funnest stories I've ever heard.
Entrepreneur, you know, and me was like that. And we used to have a lot of cats in the backyard, and I went around gathering all these cats, and they used to have the milk crates in the back of the Max Smoke and Beckard's. I'm aging myself, but remember the milk crates? They deliver all the milk back. I grabbed a bunch of crates and a bunch of cats, and I went and took my lemonade money and I bought some milk and cat food, and I set up a cat adoption agency in the back laneway. And a lady came to my dad and said, your daughter is selling people's cats out back. You need to go and see what she's doing. She goes, and under no uncertain terms am I going to pay for my own cat. Like, she's got my cat in a crate and she's trying to adopt it. So I just, you know, I saw homeless cats. I wanted to adopt them. You know, I just was always like that.
Oh, that's funny.
And I bat off ideas. And that's the problem with entrepreneurs. We are always seeing problems, and solutions and ideas are coming, right?
Yeah.
And it's really hard to focus, very highly distractible. So it's really been hard for me to keep my eye on one or two things, which is what I should give as another piece of advice. Don't go off and start getting distracted by shiny things and trying to do too many different things at one time. Really, if you've got something good, focus on that and put your energy into that, because the more you fragment yourself, you start to lose energy and focus on what you really have that's successful in front of you.
ADHD is more highly represented among entrepreneurs than in the general work population.
I think so. Yeah, a lot of mental health, actually, in people that run businesses, CEO, high-level executives. It's a very stressful place to be sometimes.
Yeah. Now, you've more recently started something else on the notion of, now it's still aligned. We just talked about focus, but you're starting something else. Superhero Kids Hair with Care. Still in the hair business.
Yeah. After I said that, to do that, no, it's actually not something else. It's something that I'm sort of already doing. This is just adding to that portfolio, mm-hmm. basically. So we're already dealing with children and their parents with the head lice issue. And so we wanted to expand and just become more all things kids hair care. So instead of just like head lice services, now we will provide haircuts and children's hair care products. I did recognize a need during COVID. A lot of the hair cutting places for kids were going out of business. And I also noticed that there wasn't anything that was particularly focused on children or families living with autism, which is what I later found out when I was doing my market research. 40% of our population has some form of living on the spectrum of autism, which was really a high number for me. I didn't have any idea. But because they require, you know, more focused, quiet, and, you know, attention-based servicing, because I saw that in my lice business. We got hired to help a lot of agencies with that because lice doesn't discriminate. And so when I started the hair care component of Lice Squad, I really wanted to focus on that other niche of helping those families that are living with autism because they can't really go and get a haircut in a big noisy salon somewhere. So it's worked out really well in Barrie, and I've opened a second one in Ajax, and hoping to license or franchise that out as well as I'm growing with the Lice Squad franchise model.
And is your model on that, is it to do that as a separate franchise or joint, or can you choose?
So you purchase a Lice Squad franchise and you can actually purchase an add-on license of the hair cutting salon, or you can just get the license of the hair cutting salon or just the Lice Squad. So you have an opportunity to do both or one or the other. And the one is through licensing. So I'm not training you. I'm not providing oversight. I'm not taking royalty on the hair cutting. You're paying a licensing fee to use that brand and that concept. Whereas right. In the franchise end of the Lice Squad, we are literally having to do everything to train you and provide you with all the resources and do the oversight and work as your franchise partner.
Mm. And how long is the training?
So, well, it's ongoing, never like anything in business, but you do a number of things on online platforming, and then you come into our head office for 4 days and you do some hands-on here. And then, like I said, everything is always ongoing. There's always, you know, things always ebb and evolve. So you look at about 6 weeks to onboard a franchisee. Yep. And as I said, we're really needing people out in the West Coast, and even the East Coast is really busy in Halifax. We had an owner there who had it for 10 years and she retired, and I've been running it corporately. But those types of places are better run with someone local. For me to run it, you know, remotely is, it's a lot.
Right. And so what's next for you?
Well, I'm hoping that at some point I can kind of step away, maybe find a business partner, maybe find somebody who might be interested in taking my concept and, you know, putting another 23 or 30 years into it. I've done 23 years and I have no plan on like retiring tomorrow, but I'm very open-minded to exit strategies and plans on how to transition part-time out of the business or full-time out of the business. I'm very open to all types of opportunities, but I'll never stop working. I will always have something to do. My creativity will not allow me to sit still for a while.
I get that sense.
So I was like, okay, so whether that be, I don't know what it would be, but I'm very open to opportunity and I want to solve problems. So I'm sure whatever is meant for me to be will be, and whatever timing that looks like, I don't know, but I am succession planning.
Nice. So I always end these with a little bit of rapid fire, just four or five rapid fire questions.
Love games.
So one decision or action that most helped you get you where you are?
Joining the Canadian Franchise Association board and learning from some of the best minds in my industry.
Great idea. Getting mentorship and peer groups. If I had to do it over again, I would?
Probably have a partner, a business partner with a little more executive acumen. I'm the creative end of things. I really would have liked to not go it alone.
Nice. That's interesting. So I get two different bits of feedback on that idea. You know, there's some people, there's a whole thought model out there that says every business needs a visionary and an implementer, and you got to have two people on all of them. And then I've had other people say, anytime you get in a partner, you got to plan well, because that partnership is going to split up. It's really interesting, these two different sort of philosophies on it and how they play out. Some are like, I never want a partner, and some people can't be without a partner. It's really interesting.
The dichotomy is that franchising is all about relationships and partnerships, right? And yeah. What that comes down to is, how can I serve you? And open communication, right? So I've been married to this business and most of my franchisees for 23 years. I'm a good partner. I've had a relationship for over 24 years. I'm a reliable, solid, loyal partner. And that's what you look for in partners, if that's how you want to go. Because there's always going to be a power struggle, but the good partner knows when to give that up for the greater good, right?
All right. One aspect of running a business I have yet to master.
Oh, I hate to say it. It's the numbers games. It's the analytics. It's all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I hear of a budget meeting and I just automatically want to fall asleep. And I know it's the most important thing, but I have an accountant and a bookkeeper for that.
Right. It's funny, I was just doing a workshop the other day and I was talking about how the numbers are your friend and they tell the story of the business. That you kind of have to know how to keep score to know whether you're winning the game.
Yes.
Okay, two last questions. Okay. One personal quality that I most had to overcome or improve to succeed.
Personal quality. I don't know. What did I have to overcome? Insecurity.
And one personal quality that most contributed to your success, no false humility.
Persistence, never giving up or wanting to quit. I mean, yes, I had my moments, but I never did, like some days I'm not doing this anymore. I've had enough. And then I never followed through on that.
Nice. So how can people find you or get a hold of you?
They can go to LifeSquad.com or call 888-LifeSquad or help@LifeSquad.com. If you can just Google LifeSquad or my name, you'll find a number of different ways of communicating, because it's all about communication.
And on that, before to finish off the communication, are there any last thoughts or thought that you'd like to share with any entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs out there?
Yes, buy a Life Squad and Superhero Kids Care with Care franchise. They are amazing. You'll be servicing your community with something vital and appreciative, and you'll make a really good living doing it. So just give me a call and I'll tell you all about it.
Geez, you're not in sales at all, are you?
No.
Really nice talking to you, Dawn. Thanks for joining us on the spot.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers.